Welcome back, everybody, into Bill's Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, 1-0. The Bills improve to 1-0. They get to 1-0 with a 34-28 victory over the Arizona Cardinals that, for the last minute or so, felt very Hail Mary-ish. Cardinals with the ball with a chance to take the lead late. But alas, Ingram makes the play. And the Bills escape with a victory. And you had the good fortune of being in attendance for this game. As I always do on these post-game shows, Luca, when the final whistle went off and the Bills improved to 1-0, what was going through your mind?
This line's not moving because I was trying to go up all the flight of stairs while I was in row 7 of the lower bowl. But no, I was very happy. Overall, And I know to some of my close friends who obviously understand how much I also care about the Arizona Cardinals for what it's worth. If it's new news to you, sorry, I do like them a lot. Bills are still my number one. But overall, I was very happy because it was a game of which we did have questions about the offense going into. And I think a lot of those questions were answered for the most part. And two, I think that when even times were getting tough, especially in the second half, when, you know, the Cardinals have a lead and the Bills defense kind of needs to step up, they did exactly that. I think the Bills defense had a great second half. Of course, if you look at the stats, it shows it clear as day. The only time they reached the end zone was on a kick return, we'll get into that at some point, but overall, when the knees were happening, when the game was over, as I was waiting forever to get up the steps to get out of the stadium, I was happy overall. I think that game went pretty much almost exactly as I myself, and I think we collectively thought it would, Josh. That may have been one of the more ugly overs I've ever seen, one of the more ugly shootouts that we've ever seen. It was not pretty. Outside of just Josh Allen being Josh Allen, the title of this episode, Josh Allen is still him. I leave that game, and he is still exactly that. He is him.
Josh Allen on the day, 18 of 23. I thought he was inaccurate, Luca. 232 yards, 2 passing touchdowns, and oh, by the way, 9 for 39 on the ground and 2 rushing touchdowns, and potentially a injured hand. I'm going to close out of my ESPN score tracker because, like clockwork, it slows down my computer. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can see that happen live, and we're back. You know, this game, you said it went the way that a lot of us expected. And I expected a close game. You and I both had a lot of respect for the Cardinals. And, you know, it was a 6.5-point line. The Bills ended up winning by 6. Sure felt a lot closer than that. I will say the way it started had a lot of people feeling uncomfortable. The Cardinals go down and get a touchdown with some help from the officials. Ingram gets a roughing the passer penalty on Kyler Murray, who's sliding down. It's clear it was a bad call. I will push back a little bit in saying when you watch it live, and that's what the refs have to do. They don't have the benefit of going to replay to pick up a flag. When you watch it live, it's close. And I think the NFL is always going to protect the quarterbacks in that scenario. And my pushback there is I don't know what Ingram is supposed to do. But when you go down like that and you leave literally an inch between your arm and Kyler Murray's head, you're putting yourself in position for them to throw the flag. I'm not a coach. I don't know what he's supposed to do on that play. Because if you hold up, Kyler Murray can easily just run right past you and score a touchdown. But I do think that was one of those situations where it's unfortunate, but I don't think it was as egregious as it ended up looking.
Yeah, I will say, so funny enough, where I was sat, myself and my buddy Joel, who I was at the game with, shout out him, overall, we had phenomenal seats. And that Kyler Murray roughing the passer incident happened quite literally in front of us. And in the moment, even where we were sat, I did not believe that in live speed to be roughing the passer. And I mean this in the most, you know, just looking at it from understanding football way, where I think the reason watching it, thinking about it, watching it live, watching the replay, Josh, I feel like if you look at it this way, so Kyler Murray, just watching a lot of Cardinals football in my life, when he goes down in a very slick way. And I think him bouncing off of the turf is actually potentially what created that question in an official's eyes, where when you see a guy kind of bounce like that while someone's flying over them, it to them would indicate that, you know, there's some sort of force happening that eventually drove them down to bounce off like Kyler. And I think in the speed of everything, that's what the official saw. And overall, that's why he flagged it. I totally disagree with the flag. I think even watching, if you watch it in slow motion, you're mentioning the forearm is very close, but overall, when you really watch it, in my opinion, the forearm's almost there as he's trying to brace and or avoid contact. And that's the natural movement of his arm as he's trying to get and shift out of the way, in my eyes. Again, this is us evaluating it now at slow speed. That's not how a flag gets flagged. I would be intrigued. Something like that, overall, I would be very intrigued. Not that we have to get off on a tangent here, but if the NFL introduced something similar to college for just instances like this, where it's not like you're going to turn this into a targeting penalty, but you have the ability where it's automatically reviewed just for simple situations like that. If it's felt and deemed necessary, you have Sky Judge, you know, hey, you might want to look at this just to give it a second look. Because I do believe that if they were to have looked at it, you know, on the screen afterwards, and they had the ability to do something about it, I think I would believe that an official would change that call overall. But it's hard to tough. I will say, as much as I disagree with the call, I understand live speed in the moment when you see it all happening as quick as it is, and you're just a simple side official like that individual was, you see the things you see. Like I mentioned, Kyler kind of bouncing off the turf a little bit with a guy flying over him. You just throw that flag. I would have liked to have seen, as much as these officials wanted to meet up and kind of talk over every single piece of laundry they were throwing out there, you would have liked to hope that someone else out there would have seen it from a better angle to tell him, hey, it actually no contact there, whatever it might be. You know, we're gonna pull the flag. But yeah, it's just one of those things where thankfully it didn't bite the Bills in the end.
I think the biggest concern, point of contention, a grievance from Bills fans this game is the run to pass ratio. I listened to a little WGR post game. They're concerned that are the Bills now morphing into this running team? And the stats do bear that out. Just when you're watching the game in the first half, you're watching Dawson Knox outsnap Dalton Kincaid. You're watching the Bills go heavy tight end personnel. You're watching Reggie Gilliam and Quentin Morris get snaps. And then when you add it up, Josh Allen had 23 passes, and the Bills in non-Josh Allen runs, there were 9 Josh Allen runs, but not even counting the Josh Allen runs, had 24 runs. So they ran traditionally more than they passed today. And I do have two different thoughts on that. One, this was a matchup that just begged you to run the ball. The Cardinals were historically bad against the run last year. They were one of two teams that gave up more than 2,000 yards rushing to opposing running backs last season, and they didn't do a lot this offseason to get better against the run. The other thing I will say, I think the short week with a very big division opponent coming up on Thursday could have played into the Bills oversimplifying their game plan just a little bit. I don't want to like give them an out on this, but Luca, how concerned are you, or how much of a red flag does it raise to you that the Bills were so run heavy? I do want to credit Joe DiBiase from WGR. This is a fascinating tweet. From 2 minutes and 40 seconds remaining in the second quarter to 8 minutes and 44 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter, the Bills called 23 of 35 plays as passes, so 67%, and they scored 4 touchdowns in 5 drives. They were totally efficient. They went pass heavy in that stretch. They scored 4 touchdowns. They were way more efficient in the passing game than the run game. So on a larger scale, does this feel like a team that is morphing into being run heavy, or is this more about it's week one and we're playing a team that has not been able to stop the run?
I almost kind of find it to be something where it's, I don't want to say neither, because I think game plan came into it And overall, I do believe early on, how do I put this? It's really hard to, of course, game plan for an opponent week one, because you have to just essentially use old tape. You have to go off of what you saw from this team in the previous year. The Cardinals were doing the same thing. Cardinals came up with a game plan that they saw on tape for last year, and the Bills had to go off of game tape of last year. And I'm sure the stat you put out there, I'm sure the Bills were very well aware of, right? You know, they understand how poor their run D was, and they even understood that on top of it, some of the defensive line and kind of the front seven pieces that the Cardinals were hoping for to improve that this year then were injured as a second year player, as an outside linebacker slash D end. And then of course, another interior D end slash D tackle first round pick this year. So overall, I do believe that there was something in that. What I will say is this to me felt like a game overall where they were trying to figure out on the fly a little bit, truly what their identity is while still wanting to enforce a game plan. And on top of that, Josh, I would put it even this way. I'd spin it in this fashion. I would say that this is a team that finally has something there where they don't just have one best way to do something offensively. And I think a weird word is going to come out of my mouth in a Josh Allen offense. Josh, I believe they have what's called balance, and they actually understand what to do when it comes to in the run game and how they want to attack that. Because I think overall, James Cook, he finished 19 for 71 yards. I think it's not a bad day. It's not the greatest day. It's solid. And I believe, though, every time James Cook was on a run, I thought it was a very good run. I thought it was very productive. I thought it did its job and everything of that. And then on top of it, I think the passing game, still the passing game, because you have Josh Allen. And Josh Allen, I mentioned it to you offline. At one point, I remember laughing almost in a way when I noticed he was, I believe, 12 of 14 for whatever amount of yards, maybe 140 something, I want to say. And the only two incompletes were the near miss to MVS on a deep shot, deepish shot. And then a ball to Kincaid on a design play in the red zone that ultimately got batted down. And that was a design play going to him that Kincaid would have turned up directly upfield, probably for great yards, if not a score. So it's incredibly efficient in the air. I thought they did a very solid job on the ground. They have this thing called, in a crazy world that we live in, this thing called balance, potentially, where it, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, Josh. So effectively, they figured this out. And I think this is something that can only instill confidence in a Bills offense, because when they go into a game, if a game plan's not working, similar-ish like this one, they can flip a switch, change it up. We're going to go with this, and let's go see what's behind door two. And then I'm sure there's even something behind door three that they still didn't even need to go to. So I think your point's valid. I don't think there's too much about it with the, you know, looking forward situation. I think it does lean in the game plan for the opponent that was in front of them. But overall, I think it's more about them kind of looking under their own hood, trying to figure out what kind of parts they have, how they can best operate, and effectively what they have is a more balanced team than what we're used to in the Josh Allen era.
Yeah, I agree with that. And what I will add on to that is I think we have to remember, and I brought this up on the halftime show, it's like we've all forgotten. We all have to remind ourselves, because it's week one, we have to remind ourselves how to watch football. Because week one, everything seems like do or die. Every play, you're living and dying with it. If your team wins, you know, it's the greatest thing in the world. If your team loses, your team's destined to have the first pick in the draft. It's just how we handle week one. By week seven or eight, we have more of a longer term view. I think it's important to understand that the Bills are only going to go as far as Josh Allen takes them. But it is September 8th, week one, against a team they are favored by more than a touchdown to beat. That can't stop the run. It's okay to be run heavy against this team. If you get to the playoffs and you get into a shootout with Patrick Mahomes and your answer is, I'm going to run on first down with James Cook every down, let's have a conversation. I don't anticipate that. I think we have to keep the longer term view in sight. I will push back a little bit, and I think this is going to be a little bit unpopular. I was not impressed with James Cook today. I thought he had a lot of really good running lanes, and I thought there were several times. And it's tough because I went back and rewatched this game, the 30-minute cut up on NFL Plus, but we haven't seen all 22 yet. I have a hunch that all 22 is not going to be kind to James Cook. I think there were several opportunities where there was a lot of meat on the bone for some of these runs to bounce outside, and he just stayed inside. And I mean, there was one time he bounced it outside. I thought he had a big run going, and then the speed of the Cardinals defense was just like, holy hell.
Yeah.
Like I knew Buda Baker was fast. I knew they had two fast linebackers, but he got the corner and I thought, oh man, he might score. And then like the next screenshot next is just like, boom, there's three Cardinals in the screen. That speed on the Cardinals defense absolutely flashed today. I thought Ray Davis, even only getting three carries, looked like he sort of ran where he was supposed to run, maybe a little better than James Cook, just something to monitor. Who knows? It is what it is. James Cook finished with 19 of 71, 3.7 yards per carry, and then had three catches for 32 through the air. Funny observation, Luca. This Cardinals team, if you're not old enough to remember the Bills drought, just put yourself in the shoes of a Cardinals fan today, because the Cardinals side of things was a Bills drought loss. You're on the road against a team that in recent years has been one of the best teams in the sport. Your team is in transition and things start going fantastic from the jump. You get basically a free touchdown. I mean, they earned it, but they got a mulligan after going to where they're going to kick a field goal. They get the roughing the passer penalty touchdown. Josh Allen fumbles on the next drive when it looks like they're set up beautifully. All of a sudden you're up 17-3 and things are going great. That's drought worthy that you still lose the game. They have this brand new shiny wide receiver that they got in the draft. And for one game, I'm not anticipating this being the story of his season or his career, but for one game, it looked like they had no idea how to use him. And with the game on the line, that would be the Sammy Watkins comparison for the Bills. Like you move heaven and earth to get Sammy Watkins and then just don't look like you know how to use him at all. And then game on the line, everything is right there for you to win. And your move is to throw basically what ends up being a jump ball to Greg Dortch when you have Trey McBride, who's been open all day. Every time you throw it to him, he's open. And Marvin Harrison, who I know had a couple of drops. Luca was in attendance, told me off air. It looked like he was very confused at certain times, but still, game on the line. I'm taking my chances throwing a jump ball to him and just thinking, okay, he's probably going to make a play. It just felt very drought Billsy, where everything feels great until it doesn't. You let a team hang around that you are a huge underdog to, and then they come back because of your mistakes, and then you have a chance to win at the end. Mind-numbingly weird play calls. I don't understand the James Conner run on third down. I didn't understand that at all. Oh. And then what was the design on fourth down? It's like in the second half, they forgot that Kyler Murray can run. I didn't understand it from their point of view, Luca. So the best thing about the drought, the worst thing, we would be so mad when the Bills lost a game like this. I'm thinking 2010 in Baltimore in overtime when Sean Nelson fumbles. Oh. I'm thinking, I want to say 2011 or 2012. Might have been 2012. Ryan Fitzpatrick in New England has the Bills ahead. Then the Patriots take a lead late. He throws an interception in the end zone intended for TJ Graham when Stevie Johnson's on the Bills. And we're all like, why are you not targeting Stevie Johnson? Just very drought Billsy. We're all crushed. The opposing fan base that just broke our souls. And it's like, did you guys really need this? Like, you guys have done enough winning. Can we just have a day? The opposing fan base is actually more upset that it was close than they are happy that they won. That's kind of the Bills fans right now. I don't know, Luke. It was kind of like carbon copy drought Bills. The one pushback I got on Twitter is the drought Bills never had a quarterback like Kyler Murray.
That, you know, what's funny is that's the only thing I was thinking about. I was like, the drought Bills never had this, you know, first overall pick shiny right. thing at under center. It's like, that is the one difference here where Kyler Murray is still Kyler Murray. Like, let's not act like he's, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick or, you know, any of these Jeff Toole under center, Thad Lewis. It's like, Kyler Murray's still a guy. Like,
if you combine Tyrod Taylor and Drew Bledsoe into one.
Yeah, that's pretty.
You give him Ryan Fitzpatrick's like gamer.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I would say the comp is fairly decent. The Marvin Harrison thing is interesting. It did look like he was very lost out there. I think it was more of him individually on top of, I think it was multiple things. He looked like he didn't quite understand what was being asked of him at times. And then on top of it, I don't think the Cardinals truly understand what they wanted to do with him. You know, like the second half, it really felt like he was out there just to be running around playing with his friends. Like no one's paying attention to this guy. Like he's just running around. He's practicing his routes while everyone else is doing their job. Like he's just out there. It was very, very weird. I don't even remember one time where Kyler was even looking his way. It was Greg Dortch, Trey McBride, Connor, Trey Benson, like all those guys. That's who Kyler Murray was operating the offense through. It was just, and then, oh, hey, by the way, here's the fourth overall pick, Marvin Harrison Jr. just kind of running by. So it was very odd. And I will say for the Cardinals fans out there, it's just, I don't know. It wouldn't be something if I was a Cardinals fan, which obviously we understand there's a little bit of context there, but I wouldn't be overly upset about that game. I think you played through it competitively. I do think that the second half wasn't just simply them, let's say, taking their foot off the gas and or just kind of not doing what they needed to do. I think there's two sides to everything, of course. And I think the Bills just did a very good job defensively of doing what needed to happen change wise, because I will say this in the trenches, and I haven't re-watched the game or anything, but it just felt very visible to me in the trenches, first half, second half, two completely different stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you could see it. Like the offensive line for the Cardinals was not having a good time in that second half. Like, whereas in the first half, it felt like they were doing a good job. They were controlling it pretty well, and it was pretty noticeable. So, you know, if you're from a Cardinals perspective, I don't know how you walk away from that too upset, other than the fact, of course, that you lost the game where you did have a lead at halftime and kind of felt like you were in a little bit more control, of course, in that span. But if you're a Bills fan as well, though, I don't know if you should be that upset either. I think you played a competitive game against, this is not a 4-win Cardinals team. They are much better than that. As bad as the defense might be, as you mentioned, Josh, they're fast. And if you're fast, speed kills. So mm-hmm. there's going to be competitive. And then on the offensive side, they were a 4-win team when they didn't have this shiny thing known as Kyler Murray under center for the vast majority of the season. They had the Pastrnak. They didn't have Marvin Harrison Jr., who you still have to account for, regardless if they're looking at him or not. And oh, by the way, Trey McBride, James Conner, Trey Benson, those are very good players in their own right as well. So it's one of those, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., you know what he does, Josh, ironically enough, is he does something that we miss the Bills doing, where you just slide every other receiver in their proper place now, where it's like Michael Wilson, pretty solid number two. Greg Dortch can just be that nice utility slot guy that you can still get some deep looks and do some gadgety things with, and everyone else kind of just shifts into place. So, I think just the story of the game, regardless of the fan base you are of with this game, is one, that was probably one of the best week one games. Two, it shouldn't be one that either side should be upset with in any way, shape, or form. I think that was a good game for both sides. You know what? I jokingly, this is going back to the, you like to lead off the episode with, and this is where I'll leave it. I walked out of that stadium and I made a joke, but it, you know, there's a little tongue in cheek in this, but I was like, the fun bet that I always bet every season, Josh, where it's Cardinals, Bills, Super Bowl, I actually felt okay with that bet walking out of the stadium. I was like, I could see it happening. And in a crazy, crazy world where a lot of things need to happen, the Cardinals weren't that bad. The Bills weren't that bad. It's like things are still going to have to work themselves out. It's week one. A lot can happen. And these teams at least played a very competitive game against each other.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like about the Cardinals. And this isn't a Cardinals show, but I mean, you were saying, and I was thinking to myself, do I even want to make this point? I'm going to. Take the quarterbacks out of it. The Cardinals have better personnel on offense than the Bills, and that's not even close. Now, I'm not talking about offensive line. Okay, offensive line, Bills all day. Cardinals, though, weapons-wise, it's not even close. And that, you know, maybe as the year goes on, maybe you see more out of Keon Coleman or Khalil Shakir and you feel better about that. But for at least right now, advantage Cardinals there. So you mentioned the lines. I want to give Sean McDermott credit for a couple of things. One, I thought he was really sharp in his post-game press conference because I hadn't thought about this. I probably should have. He was very happy. And, you know, they won a game. You should be. He made a great point. He's like, we were down 17-3, and it's not like it's Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Tremaine Edmonds, Trey White, and we're like, hey, we've done this before. We're good. Like, we know this. It's Mac Hollins. It's Taylor Rapp. It's guys that haven't been through this before. Yes, it's Josh Allen. And, you know, yes, there's some guys there that have been here, but it's not Mitch Morse on, you know, settling everybody down. It's not Stephon Diggs. And the fact that these guys were able to pull together, this could be a galvanizing moment for this group. As like, hey, we are a team. Hey, this was not a comfortable situation. Real quick, Luca, at any point today, did you feel like the Bills were going to lose?
No.
Okay.
I really didn't. Yes, down 17-3. Was it pretty? Obviously not. But overall, one, Josh Allen's still out there in it, you know, for all intents and purposes, healthy. Two, I believed that the Bills still had enough when it came to the running game to still enforce what they wanted to. And I think, for instance, that Josh Allen strip sack fumble, it's not fluky in the sense of like he just randomly dropped it. Of course, the Cardinals deserved what they got. But in the sense of, do I think that Josh Allen is going to have that happen again? 4 years ago, maybe. Now, no. Like, Josh Allen's going to figure that out, and you're not going to be giving that already happened once. It's not going to happen for the rest of the game. It's out of the way kind of deal. Here we go. Like, you got your turnover, Cardinals. Congratulations. Now it's this. Defensively as well, I never really thought that the Bills defense was kind of on the ropes with the Cardinals offense. I think the Cardinals
really?
I really didn't.
Like, oh, I did.
No, I didn't. Let me
go ahead. Get it.
It's like, I think the Cardinals just had a really good game plan. Mm-hmm. And I think the Bills defense just, it took them a bit to adjust to what they were dealing with. And it's kind of a respect shout out to the Cardinals offense and just the Cardinals in general. It's like, they are an NFL team and they are a proper team. It's, again, they're not a 4-win team where they're just going to roll over. I think they had a very good game plan, one, and two, they were executing it well. And the Bills defense wasn't quite sure what they were seeing. But again, like, as soon as we got to the second half, first half, I'm never going to say we're going to lose a game. Going back to 2021, Josh, in Tampa, we're down whatever it was at that point at halftime. I don't even remember.
24-3, maybe?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I know we had 3 points. I don't know what Tampa had. Again, I was telling people, I'm like, look, we got an entire second half. We have Josh Allen. And that was 2021. It's like, it's the same old thing. It's like, I'm not going to panic at halftime. Let's see what happens in the third quarter, because that's the most important time to me, especially when you're down. And the first two things that happen are Bills go down and drive down and score. And then Cardinals just get, you know, stood up. And it's like, here we go. Clearly, halftime adjustments happen on the defensive side as well as the offensive side. We have a game plan. Everything's okay. And at that point in time, Josh, when it became 17-17, there was zero doubt in my mind where that game was going to finish. I think after the kick return touchdown, I might have done like a ironic laugh of like, is this really about to get close again? Because it felt like going into that kickoff, this is where, you know, it's just nail in the coffin time is inevitable. But outside of that, no, I there was never an uncomfortable moment for me.
There were two moments where I was on the brink. Like, I was ready to jump off the ledge, not jump off the ledge literally, but where I was ready to say, okay, it doesn't feel like the Bills' day. And the first one was right at the end of the first half. The thing that kept me in it was knowing that the Bills had the double dip potential in their pocket, where they were going to get the ball again, and we knew they were getting the ball coming out of the second half. And even though the Bills only had 3 points to that point, you mentioned the strip sack. They also had a touchdown that was taken off the board by Osiris Torrance with a terrible face mask. Great call. Terrible penalty by him. Yeah. So it's not like you're watching this game thinking the Bills have no answers on offense. I felt like as long as the Bill, it was almost like baseball. Like, give me as many chances as the Cardinals. Give me as many innings here. Like, give me as many drives and we'll be fine. But we can't live two possessions down. So that's where the double dip was in my brain. So when they score before half, I'll tell you honestly, when they score with 23 seconds to go and the Cardinals have 3 timeouts, I'm nervous. I'm thinking, man, the way the Cardinals have gone down the field, this is plenty of time. And I think the Cardinals would have been aggressive had Dallas not bobbled the ball and then fallen out on the 5-yard line. Then they're going to go down and kneel down. The next time I was nervous, though, was at the end of the game, and we'll get into it with when I thought the Bills got a little too conservative, relying on Tyler Bass field goals, keeping the Cardinals around. I had very little interest in seeing the Cardinals touch the ball again, just because even though the Bills had a very strong second half defensively, I think you're playing with fire with that personnel, just expecting that your defense is going to be able to hold them down. So you mentioned the halftime adjustments. The Cardinals scored 5 points on the Bills defense in the second half. I'll give them credit for the 2-point conversion after the kickoff return and then the field goal. Great adjustments by the Bills. To my eyes, the Bills did two things very, very obviously. In the first half, their pass rush was very much a, we want to keep Kyler Murray in the pocket pass rush. That's where you're essentially sacrificing pass rush to basically stay in your lane, to borrow a term from kickoff return. And it made sense because the few times they went away from it, you'd see Von Miller get a good push in the pocket and get really close to Murray, and then Murray would escape and he would just have running lane for days. And so I thought in the second half, the Bills did a much better job of calculated pass rush. We're not just going to forego pass rushing, but we're going to keep an eye. Like, we're not going to run stunts. We're not going to do anything crazy. We're going to rush, but we're going to be true to our angles. And that's where I thought you saw the advantages, particularly with Greg Rousseau. I thought you also saw Daquan Jones start getting much more of a push. I thought AJ Epenesa had a very bummer of a day. I'll probably talk about him in a later segment. And I thought Von Miller, Luca, looked really good, and not just on his sack. I thought there were several times when I thought Von Miller looked like he had the juice back. Yep. And I was very impressed by that. And I think it was telling that Von Miller was on the field on the last two drives of the game for the Cardinals opposite Greg Rousseau. So that was definitely a change that the Bills made on defense. And then offensively, we mentioned it from Joe DiBiase, they passed the ball more to get back in the game, which I think it's a sign that this team has that in their back pocket. Keon Coleman had himself, he led the Bills not only in receptions. Let me get this pulled up here. He led the Bills with 4 receptions for 51 yards. He also led the Bills in snap counts. I thought it was interesting that the big four receivers, it was actually Curtis Samuel that only had like 27% snaps. Maybe that's a turf toe deal. Probably is. Keon Coleman had more snaps than any Bills receiver. I thought that was very interesting. What would you say about Keon Coleman's day?
I want to say phenomenal. And you know what? Screw it. I'll say it. Phenomenal. Only because, honestly, it wasn't that way until a key moment where he makes that one catch again, pretty right in front of us. But overall, watching that, tracking it in the air, understanding to sit back, pull back, secure the ball, you know, it was like, okay, this is someone that it's, unlike a Marvin Harrison Jr. across the way, not that I'm saying Keon Coleman outplayed Marvin Harrison Jr. There's a lot of factors in this. But whereas I mentioned Marvin Harrison Jr. looked a little lost at times or misunderstanding what was being asked of him or whatever was going on, I think Keon understood exactly what was being asked of him and understood the plays coming in, understood what was needed, so on and so forth. That's why you saw that catch happen in a big moment. You saw Josh trust Keon in that moment. All of the above. So I will say this gives me a lot more hope that I don't know if Keon's going to just be one in the shuffle. I think he still will be until proven otherwise, but there's clearly trust already there, well established. This is one game to kind of put a notch in the belt of for Josh Allen to trust him. And realistically, I think the trust with Coleman, the trust was still there with Shakir, of course, things like that. I mean, just as a receiver conversation in general, Josh, I mean, Mac Hollins was trusted in the red zone. He gets the score of his own, which, again, shout out my buddy Joel, had an all-time line right in my ear as soon as he said it. This is something I had prepped up for you. No shoes, no shirt, no coverage. Mac Hollins touchdown. I thought that was just absolutely perfect. Shout out Joel for that one. But it's the receivers make it so fascinating that I legitimately didn't realize until the fourth quarter, Josh, that Kincaid only had one target for no catches. That's to me a story of the offense. And even with all the passing that was happening, it was like, wait a second, you're telling me we're doing this right now with the receiving weapons we have and someone that I think a lot of us thought would be leaned on a little bit, at least early on, especially in Dalton Kincaid, was really not seen much. And even on top of it, Dawson Knox only had his one catch of his own up until that point as well. And it was like, wow, we are really doing this with perimeter weapons. And then also, of course, running backs like James Cook and such. So it was Keon Coleman had a, he was fantastic. And then the receivers in general, I think, Josh, stepped up, did their jobs, and everything went very, very well from perimeter weapons.
Interesting note on Dalton Kincaid, because I think a lot of us, me included, I saw this tweet from Joe Biscaglia, said, this is two drives into the game, he tweets, early, but through two offensive drives, Dawson Knox has more snaps than Dalton Kincaid. It was 11-9. And then when you look how that game played out, it felt like Kincaid wasn't on the field very much. Dwayne McFarland, who is, he's from MB Fantasy Life. He's got 91,000 followers on Twitter. I have no reason to believe this isn't accurate. Dalton Kincaid bombed in the box score today, but playing time wasn't an issue based on early data. 88% snaps. That's way higher than I would have projected. 88% snaps. Kelsey doesn't get that. 83% routes. Love that. 9% targets. Don't love that. Stay calm, y'all. Those are fantastic underlying numbers for a tight end. Guessing final percentages might be a tad lower. So that's just him charting it as he goes along. We'll wait for the official ones to come out. But I think that's a positive sign for this offense, because even though he's only a second-year player, I still feel like Kincaid is the best weapon this team has as far as reliability on the team. And I don't have any questions about his ability to get open and be a factor in this game. And you did see there was one third down where Josh Allen hit him, and he had to kind of make a couple guys miss to get the first down. He was able to do that. All right, Luca, let's talk about Greg Rousseau. Greg Rousseau had three sacks in this game, and you want to talk about high leverage sacks too. And you know, there's never a bad time to get a sack, but to me, it's one of those things like when you're up by 40, you're down by 40 and you get a sack, it just hits a little bit different. But these were the moments the Bills needed it. You talked about it. The Bills come out in the second half, they score, they tie it up. And now it's like, okay, defense, what do you got? Well, Greg Rousseau shuts down that drive with a sack. The Bills get the ball back and you're thinking, here we go. It's our time. And the Bills punt. And you're thinking, oh no, we just had it and we let it slip through our hands. But then Greg Rousseau ends the next drive with a sack fumble recovered by Dorian Williams. He ended up getting three sacks on the day, but those two in particular, another player that is probably going to get my game ball if you don't go Rousseau, who came through big time in high leverage moments. But when those high leverage moments happen, that's when it's super impressive. On rewatch, I was even more impressed with Greg Rousseau because we know he has the length. His length and his size is what makes him a first-round pick. There was a lot of projection with Greg Rousseau when he was drafted. The move he put on, is it Paris Johnson at left tackle for the Cardinals right now?
Paris Johnson. Yeah, because it was Jonah Williams. Is that his name? Jonah Williams at right tackle. Yeah.
So that's even more impressive. The move he put on Paris Johnson, who I loved in the draft, still love him. Mm-hmm. It was almost like you know speed to power. It was like power to speed. He starts off with length. He gets his arm into his pads right off the snap. So right off the snap, Johnson is not comfortable. But then what you see out of Rousseau is something we have not seen in his game since he's been drafted. He converts it to speed to dip under the block and go around. It's not like shoulder parallel to the ground like we've seen Von Miller do, but it's that esque. And it's a move that it's a club that I didn't know Greg Rousseau had in his bag. And if he can start doing that, he's not going to get three sacks every week. But you talk about his length, you talk about his power, you talk about his ability to diagnose run plays, which I think is up there with the best in the league, and his ability to stop the run. Like, I'm not even saying this to joke. I think it's Calais Campbell level run awareness out of Greg Rousseau. I really, truly believe that. If he can start combining some of these pass rush moves, he's gonna deserve every penny he gets, and he's going to be a pain in the ass to block. I don't want to say he's Myles Garrett, but he's got the athletic traits that if he puts it all together, that's the kind of freak we're talking about. Now, he's got to put it all. Myles Garrett came into the league with it all put together. That's how you get picked first overall.
Yeah.
Greg Rousseau had a lot of molding to do. It was one play. three sacks in a game. We've seen Ryan Denny get three sacks in a game for the Bills, but that one play, it wasn't just the result. It was how we got to the result. And Luka, to see Greg Rousseau be able to do those speed rushes and get his body in that direction, holy cow, was that just a beautiful thing for a defense that I think is going to need somebody on that defensive line to play significantly better than we anticipated this year.
I think the way to really say it, Josh, is the one thing that I feel like is adequate and sane with Rousseau is the one thing he doesn't have, I keep bumbling around. I'm just trying to think of the perfect way to say this. He needs to be able to create sacks. And I think that's something he hasn't been able to do. I'm not saying that he's necessarily just fallen into sacks, but at the same time, it's got that vibe-ish where it's just coverage sack or just right place, right time. You know, I'm not saying it's in a bad way, but overall, it's not something where he has moves. He doesn't have the ability to create that sack. And that example you just provided there and what we saw today was something, you know, he pulled it out of his pocket. He created something and was able to capitalize on it because of that. That's something that's what gets you paid. That's as a D end, as a pass rusher, that is what gets you paid, of course. And it's exciting because, as you've put it so well, Rousseau basically has everything else you want from that individual to be an every down D end edge presence. You just need that one thing that gets you paid and kind of is the most important thing of them all, being the ability to create sacks and come up with them also in big moments. And he did both of those things today, which feels like one of, if not the first time he's really done so. So overall, it's exciting because I will happily pay a Greg Rousseau a lot of money if he can actually do that throughout an entire season, finally, because I'm already willing to re-sign Greg Rousseau. Of course, it should not be any surprise. It's like when the time comes to pay him, it'll just be more interesting where that number was previous to him having that ability. But it's like, hey, if you can also add this, the dollar amount really just becomes, where is the market at that point? And I'm happy to pay it because you can never have enough, you know, premier edge rushers, to premier edge presence in this league. It's one of the most important positions in this game that, especially, I mean, if you take quarterback out, there's a debate that it is the most important position in this sport. So, phenomenal game. Hopefully he can build on it. Hopefully he can keep doing things like creating opportunities to sack the quarterback with moves, with ability to put hand in hand with his physical attributes, such as his length, speed, and awareness, the size, speed, and awareness that he has had this whole time.
I'm curious on Rousseau because last year we saw for the first time, and I think it really went up after Daquan Jones got hurt, the Bills kind of went away from their strength in numbers, heavy rotation, and they were like, okay, we have a dude in Ed Oliver who's playing better than everybody else. And you saw Ed Oliver get the most snaps of his career. I'm trying to find that here. He had 817 snaps last year, when prior to that, his career high was 698. So an uptick there. I wonder, throughout Greg Rousseau's career, he's always kind of been like one of the guys, but not necessarily like a guy. And, you know, there was that 8-game stretch where Von Miller was like the guy. And then Leonard Floyd last year was certainly worthy of playing time. And AJ Epenesa has always warranted a spot on the field. And Shaq Lawson is a guy the Bills have always been high on. Even though I said the nice things about Von Miller, I think they're very much going to try to manage his snap count this year. I wonder, Luka, if Greg Rousseau is going to get into that Ed Oliver world where you see his snap counts go up. You would think he would embrace that as a guy that now is 2 years away. Really, they can extend him next offseason. I think they probably will from his mega deal. Why wouldn't he want to be on the field? And for them, if he's what I think he could be, which is the best pass rusher on this team by a wide margin, I think it works for everybody to get him on the field more.
Oh, for sure. Like, just in Ed Oliver's case, like you've brought up, if you finally take that next step where we're seeing it and it becomes difficult to remove you from the field because of how you are playing, no one's going to complain about that. That just means you have earned it. You deserve it. And clearly it's being shown to the coaching staff that you are an every down guy. Now you're an every down player. We are in the best position to win by not rotating you out. And that, I mean, what's wrong with that? If you have a player that good where you have to depend on them and such, where you can still be confident or at least like your depth, but you still have that guy who just elevates himself above it, that you do not want to pull him off the field. So what you're doing is you're just rotating maybe opposite of him. If not, if say Vaughn is bouncing back and at least is showing a little bit more pop like he did today, you know, you're getting into a place where 2 years ago you hoped you had when it comes to two dudes on the edge that you can really lean on, you know, I don't want to say heavily, but lean on in the most dependent moments and some. So overall, there's zero issue if the coaching staff believes Rousseau is going to finally take that next step. And it's like, hey, let's leave him out there a little bit longer. It seems like he's figuring it out. He's figuring something else out. It's starting to all click. Let's let it run, because we saw what already happened with Ed Oliver's results when that time came. So if Rousseau's finally putting it all together like that, yeah, it's a great problem to have, Josh.
So I want to talk about a couple observations I had upon rewatch, and then I want to ask you about how the Bills handled the end of game scenario, their last two drives with the ball. So real quick upon rewatch, I thought Osiris Torrance had a much better game than I gave him credit for. Did I already bring this up on the show? I feel like I might have already brought this up. But watching it live, I felt like Osiris Torrance really struggled. There was obviously the face mask penalty that negated the Josh Allen touchdown run, cost the Bills 3-4 points there because they end up getting a field goal. And then there was a couple times I thought there was a stunt that caught him off guard. But upon rewatch, face mask penalty aside, which I'm curious to see on all 22, because even when I rewatched it, I'm thinking, I'm not convinced Josh Allen scores if Torrance doesn't do that. Just because, like, now that I am rewatching it, knowing the speed of these guys that are out there, I thought Torrance was as good as any Bills player today getting to the second level. I thought some of those James Cook runs I talked about earlier that could have gone more because of Torrance. I thought Torrance did what Luca and I talked about in the draft process last year, where even when he gets beat on the initial contact of the snap and he gets pushed in the backfield, his anchor is just otherworldly. He has the ability, the strength to just drop that anchor and recover, and he'll be a yard in the backfield. It looks like he's beat, and he just like puts up a stop sign, and that defender is not going anywhere else near the quarterback. You saw that several times today, and that's what gets that guy drafted so high, is like even when he's beat, he can recover. It's like recovery speed for a cornerback. You either have it or you don't, and boy, does he have that. And then on the stunt where I thought he got beat, it was actually a miscommunication by either McGovern or Edwards, where the Cardinals ran a great stunt right toward Torrance's gap. It looked like Torrance gave it up, but Torrance was not even responsible for that guy. That was certainly a miss by McGovern. So, and that was on a play that Josh Allen actually scrambled for a first down. So all in all, I thought he played well upon rewatch. I was a little down on Dorian Williams after rewatch. I thought he got caught up in the muck on running plays a little bit. I'm not going to bang on him too much, because we talked about this when the schedule came out. Kyler Murray, the Dolphins, and then 2 weeks later, Lamar Jackson. Not exactly the start to a season that you want to be having young linebackers and inconsistent safeties out there, because these are offenses that can absolutely expose you if you make one bad step. But I thought Dorian Williams was struggling a little bit at times. We did see the answer to the question of he is not their passing down linebacker. You saw it was going to be Cam Lewis in that Jordan Poyer role until Taron Johnson went down with an injury. He did not return. I would say he's probably doubtful for Thursday Night Football at this point. And then Cam Lewis went into the Taron Johnson role, and you saw Jamarcus Ingram become that dime backer. So kudos to both of those guys, the UB guys, for stepping into roles they hadn't game planned for. Those are just a couple call outs I had. And then Cam Lewis, first watch, fantastic. Rewatch, fantastic. His ability to shed offensive linemen in the run game and make the tackle was Taron Johnson-esque. And I don't say that lightly. You could tell that's a guy that's made a career out of special teams, because he's not afraid of contact and he knows how to get somebody to the ground. Cam Lewis is an asset for this team as a depth player. He's not Taron Johnson. I'm not saying that, but he's a guy that can start at multiple positions on this defense and be a good depth player. Luca, the end of game scenario. So the Bills really had two drives at the end of this game to kind of put the Cardinals away. And both times they failed to do so. So I'm going back here. There was a Tyler Bass. I should really have this up here. The last time the Bills had the ball, they punted. No, that's the Cardinals punter. Okay, here we go. Last time the Bills had the ball, we have a 3rd and 6, Josh Allen incomplete pass to Ty Johnson. That really just did not have much chance anywhere. He was like to his feet. But then, you know, that drive starts off with a James Cook run. But to me, the most egregious one was the last time the Bills had the ball. And that's where I want to get to here. Oh, where are we at here? I am not in the right spot. This is not fantastic podcasting. All right, here we go. Right here. Okay. Bills get the ball. James Cook up the middle. I was getting thrown off by the box score because it says A. Anderson, but they're just saying Alec Anderson reported as eligible. So that is the Bills. I was like, that can't be the Bills. James Cook up the middle on first down for 7 yards. Fantastic. James Cook left tackle for 1 yard. Not so fantastic. Josh Allen left guard for -1 yards. That was the read option play. That was 3rd and 2.
Yep.
That, I think, was the one that a lot of people had the problem with because it's like, why not put the ball in the air? I don't have an issue with that because I feel like the as good as Josh Allen is throwing, give me Josh Allen running. I feel like he's going to get 2 yards more often than not. Overall, though, after they came back, built their lead by throwing, what do you think about the Bills really kind of running the ball in that scenario? Football 101, our dads, our grandpas will tell you, you got to run the ball there. You run to win. And John Madden will tell you, like, a good running game runs out the clock. And all of that can be true. What do you think about the Bills taking the air out of the ball in their last two drives?
I feel like I might not be the best person to ask for this because, I mean, unless you are in the camp of throwing for the win, because I will live and die by that. I think, Josh, we've played Madden and or other football games, and I always throw for it. My favorite individuals in football in general, someone I always talk about when it comes to just my friends and stuff, one of my favorite coaches to watch, Bruce Arians. There is never a moment where he wouldn't throw for it. He always goes for the jugular. He always goes for that. And I believe the saying is, so you mentioned how on 3rd and 2, it's Josh Allen option. It doesn't get it done. They kick the field goal in the end. The saying is have the ball in your best player's hands. Well, you also do what's working best, and what was working best on the day was passing the ball. And I think when you have him on the ropes like that, you can essentially put it away, and you're telling me that with Josh Allen holding the ball on 3rd and 2, you don't have a pass design, a pass play, anything where you trust Josh Allen to put it where it needs to be. And on top of that, the caveat of it all is pulling back into the Bruce Arians world. It's like Bruce Arians would do this with a Carson Palmer and Andrew Luck, something like that. I guess Andrew Luck's a bad one for what I'm about to say, but, what's the worst thing that could happen is that play, that pass is not there. And then guess what? Now you have a Josh Allen with the ball, trusting that he doesn't like what he's seen. And what is he probably going to do at that point? Tuck and run. Try to pick that up on his own on a broken play, which generally what we've seen, Josh, I believe Josh Allen picks up some decent yards when it's broken pass plays, and then he finds a lane to cut up and run upfield. So, I question it a lot. But that's just, again, I think this conversation, what's to be had, is a lot more of an opinionated conversation, and we're not the individuals who make the play call. So the way I'll end it is I would love to see them more so go for the win, do what's working. Like if they were running, say this was the Cowboys game, but it was closer and just running was their most successful thing, I would totally get it. But when passing was your more successful mode of moving the ball on the day and your best player is Josh Allen, yes, technically he held the ball and the ball was in your best player's hands, but it was on an option read play where realistically, I mean, it's not like the Bills run a ton of run option anyways.
Yeah.
And it's like, I would trust Josh Allen to find something on a good play call. Of course, in the passing game where it's working, we should have something that allows you to pick up three or more yards and basically kill the game. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm definitely in that boat where it's like, just finish the job rather than just be okay if we kick the field goal and then effectively
we just saw the same thing. Watching Sunday Night Football and we're like, whoa, that was close.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the term field goal of death? You're a gambler, so I know when I explain it, you'll know what it is. But field goal of death is essentially, in the gambling world, when you have a 3-point lead late in the game and you're taking a field goal, a 3-point lead, basically what you're doing is, a 3-point lead is exactly what it is. You have a 3-point lead and you're kicking a field goal. And you know that your opponent only has one possession left. They call it a field goal of death because statistically, you're actually giving yourself less of a chance to win. Stay with me. Than you would be by going for it. The numbers bear it out. And that's why the sharp gamblers out there, when they see a team go up by 6 late, or they see a team go up by 4 late, the last place you want to be is up by 4 late. You'd rather be up by 3. And stay with me. Because all of a sudden now, a team that would have tried their best to get into field goal range to tie the game now knows they have to score touchdowns. They're more aggressive. And what they also have in their pocket is 4 downs to work with instead of 3. And it's that much harder to stop an offense. And by the Bills kicking that field goal to make it a 3-point lead to a 6-point lead, then kicking off to Kyler Murray with 2 minutes to go, ultimate field goal of death situation. The kickoff goes out of bounds. The Bills have the ball, or the Cardinals have the ball at the 40. And that's where in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, they could lose this again. That was the second time I was referring to earlier in the game. I will give McDermott credit though. He alluded to the field goal of death in his post-game press conference and said they had talked about that if it was 4th and 2 or shorter, they would have gone for it because it's not ideal to kick a field goal there. And I was super happy to hear a Bills coach say that, because that's a new school way of thinking, and I want the Bills to be up on that stuff. And to have McDermott admit that a field goal is not ideal there, because old school is like, yeah, you want to make them have to go to a touchdown. No, it's 2024. Like, yeah, a touchdown is not that hard to get. So to hear him say that is cool. I can wrap my head around the play call now. If in their mind it's 3rd and 2 and they run the ball thinking we're not going to lose yards on the run and we're going to go for it on 4th down no matter what. So we'll take our chances on 3rd down. We'll take our chances on 4th down. You don't expect a Josh Allen run to go for -1 yards. So credit the Cardinals. I'm more happy with McDermott's reasoning, but I'm with you. Ultimately, I want my team to go for it. I think it was a very negative result with maybe the right plan in mind. But I'm happy with the fact that McDermott understands the field goal of death. If you are new to our Bills chat post game format, first of all, welcome. Thank you for tuning in. And we have a segment that we love. It's called Game Balls and Game Checks. And the way this works is every single Bills game, win, lose, or draw, we come up with our game ball. That's a pretty easy to understand player that deserves a game ball for their performance. The other side of the coin, kind of like your least valuable player, is game check. And that's a player that you're like, hey, buddy, we want you to hand in your game check for this performance. We try not to copy over each other. So like if Luka were to pick Josh Allen, I would pick somebody else just because it's more interesting that way. We get more guys mentioned. So understand that going in. Luka, are you ready for the first edition of the Bills game balls and game checks?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Let's do it. Luka, who gets your game ball for the 34-28 victory over the Arizona Cardinals?
So I think I do think there's actually a few options on this one, first and foremost. And just to be someone that's a little bit out of left field here, I'm going to use this almost as a shout out rather than a true game ball, because I would say that, one, the title of this episode, of course, being that Josh Allen is still him. Josh Allen feels like the most obvious answer of all answers, but I think let's kind of think, here's the box, Josh, if you're watching, I'm shaping a box. Let's be outside the box. Let's think of someone else that deserves this. And I will actually give my game ball to Brandon Codrington, because of all things, to come in and get traded to be a returner, and the first time you touch the ball, basically, you actually bust off a pretty good return. I was like, okay, that's deserving of being like, okay, I now understand why you're here. That's just a subtle game ball. That's not my real game ball. My game ball goes to Kreider stuff.
That's not even in the box. That's like way, not even near the box. But yeah, okay, go ahead.
No, no. My game ball goes to Greg Russo. In the moment where you needed someone to step up on that side of the ball, Josh, Greg Russo stepped the F up.
Yes.
And it was phenomenal to see. Because the way we talked about it in this episode, I didn't know if I had you there for a second. The way
we're gonna post this on Twitter and people are gonna see this, Luca. I'm like, you should.
So, okay. Yeah, like you said, we go down, we score, you hold the Cardinals, Russo comes up, you punt, and then Russo shows back up again. It's like he was vital in that sequence, where it's like things are still under control, the Bills are still doing their thing, and inevitably they were able to break through, get the lead after that, and then kind of drive and take from there. And he was phenomenal from start to finish. So yeah, Greg Russo is my game ball.
Fantastic choice. I think he's the obvious choice. And you're right. Those high leverage situations when the Bills needed it most, the Bills do not win this game today without Greg Russo. And that to me is everything that the game ball is meant for. There's another player that in high leverage situations when the Bills needed it most came through and did his job. He's going to be my game ball winner. I'll get to him in a second. A couple of shout outs I want to give. You already mentioned Josh Allen, certainly worthy of that. Shout out to Keon Coleman, strong rookie performance, 4 catches, 51 yards, led the Bills in snaps. I will give a small shout out to Osiris Torrance. I thought he played really well, and really for the first quarter of his game to have that penalty, to rebound from that and play a strong performance as well. And then two defensive backs I want to call out, Cam Lewis, Jamarcus Ingram. Tough situation to be in where Jamarcus Ingram thinks he's going to be the backup nickel and Cam Lewis is going to be the dimebacker. And then in the blink of an eye, Taron Johnson's out and they're flipping roles. And I think it's like poetic that Jamarcus Ingram does knock the ball down at the end. In Lifetime, I thought it might've been pass interference. You were quick to tell me, no, not even close. And then I went back and watched it with you before we got on the air and it was not pass interference. Credit to him. And then shout out to Damar Hamlin. Starting a game, I mean, that's just really cool. I don't think he necessarily played particularly great, but, you know, it's not lost on me how amazing it is that this guy is starting a game in the NFL in 2024. Absolutely shout out to him. But my game ball, Luca, is going to be a guy that was under a lot of pressure this offseason, Tyler Bass. Tyler Bass was nails today. Absolutely nails.
Yeah.
You want to talk about high leverage situations. Bills down 10 to nothing. Josh Allen scores a rushing touchdown. It comes back on an Osiris Torrance penalty. Josh Allen scrambles on 3rd and 20 for like 2 yards. The place is booing, chanting, ref, you suck. The energy is just sucked. The energy is so negative in the entire building. And if Tyler Bass misses this kick on a windy day, it's just one more reason for these fans to boo. And he puts it right through the pipes. Massive. Yeah. Tyler Bass made all of his extra points. And then we talked about the field goal of death, but he had to make them and he made them late. And Tyler Bass on the day did he only have the two field goals? Let me see here.
Yeah. I think he had two field goals.
Tyler Bass was 2 for 2 on field goals, long of 39, like nothing spectacular, 4 extra points, windy day. But this to me is more of a larger story. All offseason was, what do we do about Tyler Bass? The lasting memory of missing the kick against the Chiefs. And he's not out of the woods yet, but this was a big test. And boy, did they need him today. And boy, did he come through. Good for Tyler Bass. That was very nice to see. Luca, other side of the coin, who gets your game check award?
This is a little bit of a tough one because honestly, I'm trying to think. I will say Osiris Torrance was kind of the individual walking out of the stadium that I had, and it was only for a little bit more of a personal reason because one of my call outs from our previous episode, Josh, was of course me saying, I think Osiris Torrance takes a big step. He's going to be not just a notable offensive lineman, of course, again, for the Bills, that he's actually going to be recognized around the league as one of the best guards. And then of course to have a really bad face mask penalty and then a couple false starts as well, I believe called against him. On top of just from what looked like from being at the stadium, allowing a little bit of pressure up his avenue. I will say that's where it was going to go, but I will take your word for it, Josh. I will take your word that it wasn't as bad as it seems, and I'll give him a pass for now. We'll just put it that way. For now, I will do that. So my game check award is realistically going to go to Ty Johnson, because they could have I think they could have just gone through this game without him. I think Ty Johnson he was out there. The drop's not on him when it comes to this drop, all that kind of stuff. It's just one of those ones where I think there are a couple other individuals I could go to. I'm not going to do Dorian Williams because I don't believe he played necessarily as poorly as it sounds like he did. He at least looked like he was running around, and I'm not going to fault him for not being the best in pass coverage, because we already know that that's not really his strength anyways. So I'm just going to utilize this award of who do I feel like could have not shown up and would have made no difference. That's who I'm going to give it to, is Ty Johnson.
If you're watching on YouTube and I made a face when Lucas said Ty Johnson, it had literally nothing to do with what Lucas said. I made chili today for NFL opening day. I am not in game shape when it comes to NFL food. I am hurting right now. I am like every 5 seconds I'm muting my mic like bleh. So that's what the face was. I was hoping it wasn't caught on the mic. Ty Johnson's an excellent call out, because I was left wanting more of Ray Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what was most notable about Ty Johnson, Luca, was the end of half drive. He was in there for every snap. And that tells me he's got that Latavius Murray pass blocking role, which means he's not going away. I would love to see Ray Davis morph into that. You've mentioned before he wasn't particularly strong at the pass blocking in college. We know that's not necessarily James Cook's strength. So it seems like, at least for now, it's going to be the Ty Johnson show as far as that goes. But I have no problem with that. I thought he was really a non-factor in this game. I'm going to go with a guy that I love. I mean, he's from my hometown. AJ Epenesa. Rough day. He had a tackle assist on the day, and I don't judge defensive linemen by stats. I think there's a reason why Von Miller was on the field late. Yes, Von Miller looked good, but AJ Epenesa did not look good. He was getting stood up by both tackles in his rush. There was a significant drop-off in Bill's pass rush from when it was Rousseau and Von Miller to when it was AJ Epenesa and Casey Tuhill, who, I mean, I would give him a game check, but he shouldn't even be on the roster. Like Kingsley Jonathan, where are you? Anyway, I don't want to get lost in the muck there, but I wish I would have written this down. I think it was James Conner's touchdown run, but it was definitely an explosive run by James Conner. AJ Epenesa is unblocked on the play by design. Everybody else on the line blocks down to get the hole for James Conner. AJ Epenesa gets into the backfield and he stands there because he's shocked at what he's looking at and freezes. And then James Conner just blows right in for a touchdown. It would have been a tough play to make, but if he had awareness on that play, he could have blown it up. Instead, he was so shocked he was in the backfield, he just froze. And I thought early in the game, the Bills were really having a tough time doing something that I know is a pet peeve of yours, giving up edge contain. And I thought AJ Epenesa was, strangely enough, somebody who's been strong at that in his career, the biggest culprit of that today, multiple times giving up edge contain. And this is a team that'll make you pay for that when you do that. And so for that, I give it to AJ Epenesa. It's one game. They re-signed him in the offseason. He's going to be an important player for this team. I don't have unrealistic expectations for AJ Epenesa. I think he's a rotational player that can give you starter level snaps at times. But I think if he's considered one of your two best pass rushers, then you need another pass rusher. And that's not just based on today. That's based on his career. I think he's a nice rotational piece that shouldn't be starting for a team that has high aspirations to be a high-end defense. So that's going to be my game check award winner. All right, Luca, any final thoughts on this game before we quickly turn our attention to what the Bills have coming up in about 4 days?
No, I think we covered it all pretty well. And you know, realistically, I'm glad this game is behind me, because I'm done rooting against another team that I like. And I can let both of my favorite teams just enjoy the rest of their seasons.
If you're watching on YouTube, Luca's giving you a pretty big clue with what he's wearing of why he is also an Arizona Cardinals fan. It might be where Luca went to college. So, you know, everybody's allowed to have teams they like. Luca's been a Cardinal fan and a Bills fan, so it is what it is. Two big things to monitor for the Bills this week. Taron Johnson left with a right forearm injury, did not return to the game. Anytime a player leaves and does not return, you're concerned. There, I would say maybe one hope of optimism is maybe the Bills were extra cautious knowing they have a more important game in 4 days. But I would think that there's probably a very significant chance that Taron Johnson is not going to be playing in that game against the Dolphins on Thursday night. The other thing that, you know, we haven't even mentioned yet, but Josh Allen got his hand x-rayed, his left hand, non-throwing hand. And we've yet to hear an update on that. And, you know, there is a world, there's a path where Josh Allen has a broken hand and he's not able to play for a couple of weeks. My pushback on that would be is I feel like Josh Allen would play even with a broken hand and just find a way to tape it up. But I do think there's a path for the Bills to overrule him. They have a lot of money invested in this guy. It's week two. Let's get it right. And let's, you know, when Josh Allen had, what was it, Luca, the elbow injury that he suffered against the Jets, and it just, they played through it, but it just, it felt like it took twice as long to get right. I wonder if the Bills learned their lesson from that. So something to keep an eye on, even if the Bills determine like letting it rest for another 2 weeks could just help it get to the point where he can play comfortably with it. It wouldn't stun me if the Bills err on the side of caution here. But I mean, if you're asking me to predict what happens, I think we're going to turn our TVs on Thursday night and see 17 under center. But those are obviously, Luca, two big injuries to monitor. Arguably the two best players on either side of the ball.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the Josh Allen one goes without saying, of course, but even with the Taron Johnson one, I think Taron Johnson plays a big role, especially in games like against the Dolphins, where you do want that type of individual there to play a versatile role. The Josh Allen one is interesting to me because what we've discussed already offline and what individuals, by the time we're listening to this, hopefully we have an update, or by the time you're listening to this, hopefully we have an update. But realistically, as we're recording here right now on Sunday night, you know, what was reported is that they're going back to get x-rays the next morning. That's usually for second opinions. And that's never a good sign. If you're getting additional opinions on something, you would normally like to hear something after a 1 o'clock game where all x-rays were negative and, or something as simple as that. And that's not what we've heard as of now. Now, is this them potentially just being very precautionary with it instead? Who knows? You know, we'll have to just keep our ears to the ground when it comes to that. The Taron Johnson one, to me, just to go into that a little bit more, it does concern me the fact that it was early on. It was clearly labeled as a forearm. He was immediately ruled out once it got to halftime after being questionable in the first half. And I don't know what updates are personally out there myself, but realistically, on a short week, as I mentioned, I do believe Taron Johnson has a very important role on the defense in general, but then in a big game against Miami, and it for someone to be ruled out as quick as it was, I'm sure it's not, you know, any small injury. It just probably comes down to what severe or what the severity is of this injury. And I don't feel great about it from a short week. What gives me at least what allows me to sleep easy on it, though, is going back to something you said earlier in this episode. Cam Lewis looked phenomenal in that role today. And at least it feels like something where if you need to get through a short week and then Taron would be ready to go come week three, Monday night at home against the Jags, I'm not exactly sitting here saying that it's, you know, you need to put Taron Johnson at risk when it comes to this short turnaround, and you should be able to get through it one game with Cam Lewis. And at least in a sense of, it feels like the game Cam Lewis had at least deserves that kind of thought, because I don't think that was really there before this, Josh. I know you're a Cam Lewis guy yourself, but realistically, I think he earned the right to kind of get that opportunity if Taron Johnson's health is truly kind of teetering on the balance of if it makes sense on a short week.
And it's funny too, like Sean McDermott mentioned in the post game that they were very lucky that they determined to have Jamarcus Ingram active, because I put out projected inactives for this game. I thought Jamarcus Ingram would be inactive, knowing that Cam Lewis can back up at nickel and, you know, back up at safety. And then what I didn't realize is Codrington is literally a kick returner. Like they don't even have him listed on the depth chart for quarterback. So that's one area where that they don't get the same benefit that they would have had they had a cornerback / kick returner. But in Hardy, but I think the Bills are in good shape with Cam Lewis. I'm a big Cam Lewis guy. And I think obviously we'll see Ingram activated for this game, especially if Taron Johnson doesn't play. And, you know, I'm totally fine with the Bills taking a precautious nature with Taron Johnson for sure. I'm looking at Banged Up Bills timeline. Follow him on Twitter, by the way, Banged Up Bills. He's fantastic with these injury updates. He looks at the replays and tries to really assess what's going on. So he posted, first clip, cradles the ball, left hand gets smashed. Likely contusion, small chance for fracture, more worried about gripping for running and handoffs. He goes on, you know, that was 6 hours ago. He goes on to say, like, a little concerning, you haven't seen reports, but nothing to panic about just yet. Keep in mind, these teams, they aren't just like not putting reports out because they don't want us to know. It does the Bills no good to like let the world know, which includes the Miami Dolphins, oh yeah, Josh Allen's just fine. No. If you spend 5 minutes this week preparing for Mitch Trubisky, that's a 5-minute advantage we have if Josh Allen plays. So let's just see what happens. I'm not worried. I mean, I'm worried. Anytime you're starting quarterbacks hurt, you're worried, but I have a feeling he's probably going to be fine. On the other side of things, Jaylen Waddle got tested for a concussion, but came back in and played. For those that like watched it closely while it was happening, it was more of like a neck injury. So that's why he was back. Cause it, when I saw that, I was like, there's no way he's gonna be ready for Thursday night. And then David Long, their linebacker, looks like he may have messed up his hand. So he looks like he's very doubtful for Thursday night football. Early thoughts on the game, Luca. The Bills play the Dolphins. The Dolphins are 1.5-point favorites. We know that the Bills are the team that essentially ended the Dolphins season last year, even though they did go on to lose a playoff game in Arrowhead. You like to say they lost 2 playoff games in 1 year. what's your early read on this game?
I think it's exactly where I believed it to be last week when we did our season prediction show. I don't think you can really read too much into either the Bills game and or the Dolphins game this week and, you know, come away with any massive difference from kind of where you're at. It's not like there's enough tape out there to truly make a different judgment on anyone. As well as, yes, the Dolphins did struggle with the Jags. The Jaguars, if you're not familiar with the term Jags, but overall they got the job done. They're still the Dolphins. They're still full of speed. They still have Tyreek Hill, who can even be arrested and still show up to game day, crack off an 80 yarder and act like, I mean, not literally act like nothing happened, cause he highlights it in his press and his post game, press conference, with his platform, utilizing it in a, I'm not going to say it in like a negative way. Like he said, what he said made sense. But overall it's an interesting thing where going into this game now, I think the Dolphins and the Bills are in the similar boat where there's potential. I'm not saying that they were looking ahead, but they understood what was coming around the corner from their week one matchups. And I can easily see it just like I saw it last week where it's like, I think the Dolphins are going to have, they've had this game circled and this is going to be a, you're going to get everything out of the Dolphins in this game. That is going to be the case. So the Bills really need to kind of be ready to go here. And realistically, it does suck that we already have kind of question marks with Josh Allen's health, with Taron Johnson's health, and we'll have to see how this goes on a short week.
I'm glad the Bills got the win today because you and I both picked this Cardinals game as a, or no, this Dolphins game as a loss. And if you had lost this Cardinals game, starting the season 0-2 would have been less than ideal. I think it buys the Bills some time. It buys them the flexibility to lose a Thursday night game that road teams often do lose. But I give the Bills a fighting chance, 1.5-point underdogs. And this is a team they play well against. We'll see what answers they can come up with on a short week against a Dolphins defense that I think will present more unique challenges than the Cardinals did. The Dolphins were not firing on all cylinders today offensively. It was week one. Luca likes to say week one is a liar. I'm not going to assume that the Dolphins forgot how to play offense because they struggled 1 week against the Jaguars. But I am interested to see what happens in this game. What's coming up for us this week, a little bit of a unique schedule. So we'll kind of get into that just now. Our podcast that you're listening to right now is going to post on Monday. On Wednesday, I will post my Bills Dolphins predictions. We will certainly have our updated version of the injury report, what's going on with Josh Allen, what's going on with Taron Johnson. And because this game is on Thursday Night Football, we will have our normal halftime show that I host. So if you want to go check out my reaction to Bills Cardinals halftime, the title was "What the Hell is Happening?" You can see that live and what happened, but I go live every halftime. Luca and I are going to be back live on Friday night. It'll be, you know, it's not going to be the same night that the Dolphins game happens, but we figured, hey, we're going to, let's do a live show on Friday night. We will obviously break down everything happening from Bills, Dolphins, the fallout. And then as Luca and I like to do, that'll give us the opportunity to also look ahead to the weekend of the NFL. We'll get into Luca's locks. He's going to be posting those as YouTube shorts and TikTok videos this season. But because we're live on Friday, we'll get a little bit more longer form version of that, where Luca will let you know some point spreads he likes. 2-1 this week. So win some money with your guy, Luca. And yeah, and then we will not have a Bills Chat podcast the following Monday. We'll just be posting the live show as Bills Chat podcast on Saturday morning. And that will be Bills Chat Pod for that week. But a lot coming up and obviously a lot to figure out with these injuries. Luca, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, I there's a weird thing where going into this year, I wasn't happy about this early kind of short week, but I will say now sitting here, I am kind of enjoying this. It'll be nice to, we finally got the taste of regular season football, right, Josh? We finally got our week one game, and then we get a really quick turnaround to get our week two game in. Like it's like it's, you know, if anyone plays Madden or is in an online dynasty or anything like that, it's a quick kind of advance schedule, and you're the first game out the gate on a quick advance. It's really nice and everything like that. So I'm excited for Thursday. Let's see what we got in store.
I'm excited too. And I hope you enjoyed the Bills 1 o'clock kickoff today, because it's a few weeks before you see one of those, as the next 3 weeks, the Bills are in prime time. All right, Luca. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. This has been Bills Chat Pod, and we will see you back here on Friday night for our live show next time on Bills Chat.